A logo appears over a flat, unmoving globe. MCA Universal Home Video. Now, our view zooms past a black sky full of stars to a full, rotating, deep blue model of the Earth, surrounded by twinkling rings. Words materialize over the spinning planet. Universal, an MCA company. Titles appear in white letters on a black screen. A Gordon Company production. A Phil Alden Robinson film. Kevin Costner as Ray Kinsella in Field of Dreams. Starring Amy Madigan, James Earl Jones, Timothy Busfield, Dwyer Brown, and Frank Whaley. With Ray Liotta as Shoeless Joe and Burt Lancaster as Doc Graham. Casting by Marjorie Simkin. Costume designer Linda Bass. Production designer Dennis Gassner. Director of photography John Lindley. Editor Ian Crawford. Music composed by James Horner. Executive producer Brian Frankish. Based on the book Shoeless Joe by W.P. Kinsella. Produced by Lawrence Gordon and Charles Gordon. Written for the screen and directed by Phil Alden Robinson. Now a series of photographs, films, and slides.
My father's name was John Kinsella. It's an Irish name. He was born in North Dakota in 1896 and never saw a big city until he came back from France in 1918. He settled in Chicago, where he quickly learned to live and die with the White Sox. Died a little when they lost the 1919 World Series. Died a lot the following summer when 8 members of the team were accused of throwing that series. He played in the minors for a year or two, but nothing ever came of it. Moved to Brooklyn in 35, married Mom in 38, and was already an old man working at the Naval Yards when I was born in 1952. My name's Ray Kinsella. Mom died when I was 3, and I suppose Dad did the best he could. Instead of Mother Goose, I was put to bed at night to stories of Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and the great Shoeless Joe Jackson. Dad was a Yankees fan then, so of course I rooted for Brooklyn. But in 58, the Dodgers moved away, so we had to find other things to fight about. We did. And when it came time to go to college, I picked the farthest one from home I could find.
Berkeley.
This, of course, drove him right up the wall, which I suppose was the point. Officially, my major was English, but really, it was the 60s. I marched, I smoked some grass, I tried to like sitar music, and I met Annie. The only thing we had in common was that she came from Iowa, and I had once heard of Iowa. After graduation, we moved to the Midwest and stayed with her family as long as we could. Almost a full afternoon. Annie and I got married in June of 74. Dad died that fall. A few years later, Karen was born. She smelled weird, but we loved her anyway. Then Annie got the crazy idea that she could talk me into buying a farm. I'm 36 years old. I love my family. I love baseball, and I'm about to become a farmer. But until I heard the voice, I'd never done a crazy thing in my whole life.
In a home movie, the tall, ruggedly handsome Ray and the pixie-ish red-haired Annie grin in front of a real estate sign that reads, "Sold." Annie holds up an imaginary pitchfork. A weathered white farmhouse stands in the background, fade to black. Now a pale golden patch of light glimmers through a dense wall of lead-gray clouds. Our view rises above miles of flat farmland, dotted with a white farmhouse and a red barn. We scan over a lush green cornfield stretching in neat, straight rows across several acres. Ray wanders among the stalks, their height matching his. His back turned to us, Ray freezes in mid-stride. He turns around hesitantly, frowning, his mouth hanging slightly open. His eyes shift uneasily beneath his furrowed brow as he scans the field. Finally, he turns back with a nervous grin and continues through the emerald green corn.
If you build it, he will come.
Ray whirls around and scans the flat, deserted horizon. He glances toward the house where Annie and Karen lounge on a porch swing.
Hey, Annie! Annie, what was that?
What was what?
That voice just now, what was it?
Annie exchanges a look with the little girl, who shakes her head.
We didn't hear anything.
Ray nods slowly to himself.
All right.
He walks out of view to the right.
If you build it, he will come.
Ray dashes back and looks around frantically.
Okay, you must have heard that.
Sorry. Hey, come on into dinner.
Ray watches Annie and Karen go into the house, his face twisted with anxiety. He blinks rapidly and shakes his head, muttering to himself as he walks out of the field. Now, inside a cluttered, cozy kitchen, Annie prepares dinner. Ray walks in and kicks off his boots.
Is there like a sound truck on the highway or something?
Nope. Hey, Karen, dinner's ready!
Kids with a radio?
Nope. Hey, are you really hearing voices?
Just one.
He opens the fridge.
What did it say?
If you build it, he will come.
If you build what, who will come?
He didn't say.
I hate it when that happens.
Me too.
He sinks into a chair and sighs. Nighttime. Bolts of lightning explode in a pitch-black sky. Annie and Ray lie asleep in bed. Ray's eyes fly open.
If you build it, he will come.
He raises his head from the pillow and scans the room, then gets up and wanders over to a bay window. Outside, the rich green cornfield lies still beneath the midnight blue sky.
Build what?
Ray?
Annie's eyelids droop open.
It's okay, honey. I was just talking to the cornfield.
Ray shuffles back to bed. Morning. Karen watches TV at breakfast.
Well, anyway, I was walking down along the street, and I heard this voice saying, "Good evening, Mr. Dog." Well, I turned around, and here was this big 6-foot rabbit leaning up against the lamppost.
Ray clicks off the TV. Karen stares reproachfully at him.
Why'd you do that? It was funny.
Trust me, Karen, it is not funny. The man is sick. Very sick.
Karen, honey, if you're finished, go get your book back. Let's go.
Oh, hon, I'll take her today. I got some errands to do in town.
Far out!
Ray and Karen head for the door.
Hey, what if the voice calls while you're gone?
He shoots her a dirty look.
Take a message.
Bye.
Later at a feed store.
In all those years, did you ever... Well, it's just I've heard that sometimes farmers out in the field, they hear things, you know? Voices?
You're hearing voices?
No. It's just that I heard that some farmers do, and I, of course, don't, so I was wondering if I was doing something wrong or something. Did you ever hear voices out there?
Who's hearing voices?
Ray is. Not in the field.
No, I'm not.
A dozen grizzled farmers stare at him.
Noises. Yeah, that darn tractor. I'm just going to get some 3-in-1 oil, and that ought to do it. Nice talking to you.
Ray grins and backs away from the counter with a sack of seed and 2 bottles of oil. The farmers, mostly wearing baseball caps and dull plaid shirts, crane their necks to watch his retreat. Later, bright sunshine gleams through puffy white clouds floating in an azure sky. In the cornfield, Ray digs at a cornstalk root with a shovel. He pauses, casts a searching frown at the field, then stoops to pick up the newly dug plant.
If you build it, he will come.
All right, that's it. Huh? Who are you, huh? What do you want from me?
With a puzzled frown, Ray turns and stares at the endless sea of corn. Like a mirage, a baseball diamond appears in the distance. The diamond fades, then reappears. Ray's jaw drops open in astonishment. Now, a young man with wide, clear eyes and a square jaw turns to face us. He wears a baggy, old-fashioned baseball uniform and cap, white flannel with thin pinstripes and dark piping. As his image fades, Ray turns in a slow circle to gaze at the cornfield, his T-shirt a bright white fleck against the acres of lush green. Later that night, Ray, Annie, and Karen sit at the dinner table.
Hey, you don't suppose this is like acid flashback or anything, do you?
I never took acid.
Well, maybe it will someday. It's like a flash forward.
Annie, there's more.
Honey, why don't you eat a little bit?
I think I know what if you build it, he will come means.
Ooh, why do I not think this is such a good thing?
I think it means that if I build a baseball field out there, that Shoeless Joe Jackson will get to come back and play ball again.
Annie nods, then grins.
You're kidding.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Ray shakes his head. Later, he carries Karen to bed.
Boy, I thought my family was crazy, but this is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
I know, it's totally nuts.
I mean, Shoeless Joe.
He's dead. Dad in 51, he's dead.
He's the one they suspended, right?
Right.
He's still dead?
As far as I know.
They tuck her in and turn out the light. Later, in bed.
Did you know Babe Ruth copied his swing?
If I did, I'd forgotten it.
Bare-chested, Ray rolls over and drapes an arm around Annie, half asleep.
You're supposed to be so graceful and agile. So actually, to see him play again. To let him play. To right an old wrong.
Wait a minute, Bob.
She turns on a light.
Are you actually thinking of doing this?
No. I mean, I can't think of one good reason why I should, but...
She caresses his shoulder as he stares into space. He falls back onto the pillows and gazes at the ceiling.
I'm 36 years old. I have a wife, a child, and a mortgage, and I'm scared to death. I'm turning into my father.
What's your father got to do with all of this?
I never forgave him for getting old. By the time he was old as I am now, he was ancient. He must have had dreams. He never did anything about him. For all I know, he may have even heard voices too, but he sure didn't listen to them. Man never did one spontaneous thing in all the years I knew him. Annie, I'm afraid of that happening to me. And something tells me that this may be my last chance to do something about it. Crazy.
Yes.
They smile tenderly at each other.
But I also think if you really feel you should do this, then you should do it.
Ray pulls Annie close to him in a passionate kiss. They embrace each other tightly and sink onto the pillows. From outside, we see the glowing bedroom light turn off. Daytime.
What the hell is he doing?
He's plowing under his corn.
Why?
Ray sits with Karen in his lap on a large green tractor as he mows down his corn stalks.
Ty Cobb called him the greatest left fielder of all time. They said his glove was the place where triples go to die.
Could he hit?
Could he hit? Lifetime average, .356, third highest in history.
Why'd they call him Shoeless Joe?
Well, when he was still in the minors, he'd bought a new pair of spikes, and they hurt his feet. So about the sixth inning, he took them off and played the rest of the game in just his socks. The other players kidded him, called him Shoeless Joe, and the name stuck.
A growing crowd watches.
He's gonna lose his farm.
Damn fool.
Then in 1919, his team, the Chicago White Sox, they threw the World Series.
What's through?
It means they lost it on purpose. Gamblers paid them to. Except Shoeless Joe.
Now, he did take their money, but nobody could ever prove he did a single thing to lose those games.
Annie helps him build bleachers.
I mean, if he's supposed to be throwing, how do you explain the fact that he hit 375 for the series and didn't commit one error, huh?
I can't.
12 hits, including the series-only home run. They said he's trying to lose.
It's ridiculous.
Well, the commissioner of baseball suspended 8 of the players, including the great Shoeless Joe Jackson, for life.
What's suspend?
Means they never let him play the game again.
Days later, Ray and Annie picnic on the completed field.
You know, my father said he saw him years later playing under a made-up name in some 10th-rate league in Carolina. Said he put on 50 pounds and the spring was gone from his step, but he could still hit. Dad used to say nobody could hit like Shoeless Joe.
I think that's the first time I've ever seen you smile when you mentioned your father.
Ray gazes into the distance. Tall, multi-bulbed light towers illuminate the field. He heaves himself to his feet and surveys his work. White chalk lines run along the dirt base paths which enclose the grassy diamond.
I have just created something totally illogical.
Annie stands next to Ray, who grins widely.
That's what I like about it.
Am I completely nuts?
She smiles and tucks her arm around him.
Huh? Not completely. It's a good baseball field, Ray.
It's kind of pretty, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Later that night, Annie reaches to Ray's side of the bed with one freckled arm and finds a dent in his empty pillow. She slowly opens her eyes and sits up, a gentle smile tugging at her lips. She climbs out of bed and goes over to Ray, who sits on the window seat gazing out at the dark field.
Any sign?
He shakes his head as she lies down next to him.
Something's gonna happen out there. I can feel it.
The scene dissolves to wintertime. The baseball diamond lies buried under a solid white blanket of snow. Luminous flakes fall from a pale gray sky. Ray stares out a window with a preoccupied frown. Behind him, colorfully dressed guests gather around a sparkling Christmas tree. The scene fades to black. Now Karen watches a baseball game while her parents huddle over a stack of bills.
Daddy, what's a southpaw?
It means a left-handed pitcher, honey. So how bad is it?
Well, considering how much less acreage we have for corn, I say we'll probably almost break even.
Annie tosses her pen down and fidgets anxiously.
We used up all our savings on that field, Ray.
Daddy?
Just a minute, Karen.
Ray takes off his reading glasses.
So what are you saying? We can't keep the field?
Makes it real hard to keep the farm.
She watches him keenly. Ray slumps his head onto his hands.
Daddy?
In a minute, Karen!
There's a man up there in your lawn.
Ray stands up slowly and starts toward the window, then pauses and gently strokes Karen's shoulder. He paces into the living room, his mouth agape, and stares out onto the darkened field. In the outfield, beyond third base, the ghostly white figure of a man stands alone. He turns to gaze at the house. Ray nods slightly as Annie approaches him from behind. Her mouth drops open as she stares at the stranger. His dark-shadowed figure, backlit by the moon, is edged in ghostly white. He wears a baggy, old-fashioned baseball uniform.
Put up some coffee. Why don't you go on outside?
Annie grins broadly as Ray nods, unsmiling. She moves to the window and watches as the young player from Ray's vision gazes at the field, his mouth agape and eyes wide with wonder. Kneeling slowly to pluck a blade of grass, he casts a long shadow on the dark field. The letters S-O-X adorn his white pinstriped flannel uniform. He glances up suddenly and stands as Ray comes out of the house through a screen door. His eyes fixed on the stranger, Ray reaches for the light tower switch. His mouth still hanging open, the young baseball player squints at each tower as it lights up. Ray, wearing faded jeans and a baggy green shirt, walks steadily toward the lit field. The player peers at him over his shoulder, his clear hazel eyes wide and sharp. He nods once to Ray, who returns the nod. Keeping his eyes fixed on Ray, the player backs up slowly and punches his left hand into the stubby, wide webbing of his old-fashioned black leather glove. Standing in left field, he leans over and places his hands on his knees. Ray hurries over to the chain-link backstop, picks up a wooden bat, and takes several white baseballs out of a bag. He steps up to home plate and gestures with the bat and ball to the player. The player shifts his feet expectantly and punches his glove. Ray tosses the ball in the air and hits a weak grounder. The player straightens up and bites his lip. Grinning bashfully, Ray retrieves the ball and steps back into the chalk-lined batter's box.
Sorry.
The player resumes his crouch.
I get some out there.
He hits a high fly ball. The player standing deep in left field catches it. He grabs the next underhand. With a two-handed snag, he takes the third ball out of the glove and jogs across the grassy infield toward Ray, who stands at home plate, staring. The young player stops several feet away from him and returns his gaze.
Hi. Ray Kinsella.
Joe Jackson.
Ray nods respectfully at the fidgety young fielder, then gapes as Joe trots past him to an array of equipment leaning against the backstop. Joe stops and stares in amazement, then eagerly reaches into a canvas bat bag. He pulls out two sleek wooden bats and leans one against the fence, then holds the other up and caresses it, running his hand along the smooth, polished wood. Ray moves behind him.
Bet it's good to be playing again, huh?
Joe admires the bat without looking up, then glances quickly over his shoulder at Ray, who smiles.
Getting thrown out of baseball was like having part of me amputated. I've heard that old men wake up and scratch itchy legs that have been dust for over 50 years. That was me. I'd wake up at night with the smell of the ballpark in my nose, the cool of the grass on my feet, the thrill of the grass.
He twists the bat, grips it with a fond, reminiscing smile, then glances up at Ray.
Can you pitch?
Yeah. Not bad.
He hands Ray the bag full of baseballs. As Joe strides toward home plate, Ray eagerly tosses his own bat aside. He races out to the pitcher's mound, then stops abruptly.
Don't we need a catcher?
Not if you get it near the plate, we don't.
Ray breaks into a silly grin.
Right.
He trots onto the dirt mound and sets down the bag. Joe takes a few practice swings, then fixes Ray with a clear-eyed, intense stare. Ray fingers the baseball and takes a deep breath.
I am pitching to Shoeless Joe Jackson.
He winds up and throws. Joe knocks a line drive deep into left field. Ray waves to the plate with a grin.
Nice hit.
Joe crouches into his batter stance as Ray throws a succession of pitches. With an embarrassed smile, Ray picks up another ball and waves it in the air.
See if you can hit my curve.
Unsmiling, Joe crouches and cocks his bat behind his head. Ray delivers.
Oh.
The ball bullets toward the mound, knocking Ray off his feet.
Yeah, you can hit the curve ball.
Put one right here, huh?
He holds his bat low.
Right?
Joe takes a few warm-up swings and assumes his batting stance. Ray winds up and hurls a pitch. The ball sails high and far and disappears into the forest of corn beyond left field.
Right. You're a low ball hitter.
Man, I did love this game. I'd have played for food money. It was a game. The sounds, the smells. Did you ever hold a ball or a glove to your face?
Yeah.
I used to love traveling on the trains from town to town. The hotels. Brass platoons in the lobbies, brass beds in the rooms.
With a wistful smile, he gazes out at the empty bleachers.
And it was the crowd. Rising to their feet, the ball was hit deep. Shoot. I played for nothing.
Annie and Karen wave from the porch. Ray gestures for them to come down.
It's my family.
As they start toward the house, Joe's gaze lingers on the field.
What's with the lights?
Oh, all the stadiums have them now. Even Wrigley Field.
Makes it harder to see the ball.
Yeah, well, the owners found that more people could attend night games.
Owners.
Joe shakes his head in disgust. Now a close-up of Joe's tattered black leather spikes. He hesitates, inches away from the white gravel lining the edge of the field. Joe's eyes shift uncomfortably as Ray stares.
Mr. Jackson, this is my wife, Annie, and my daughter, Karen.
Ma'am? Hi.
Are you a ghost?
Karen, she's kidding.
It's okay. What do you think?
You look real to me.
Well, then I guess I'm real.
Would you like to come inside?
Thanks. I don't think I can.
They all look down at the white gravel border. Joe starts to jog back onto the field, then stops and turns around.
Can I come back again?
Yeah. I built this for you.
There are others, you know. There were 8 of us. It really meant a lot to them.
Yeah. Anytime. They're all welcome here.
A glimmering shroud of gray mist hovers over the cornfield as Joe trots toward it. He pauses in center field and turns again.
Hey! Is this heaven?
No. It's Iowa.
Joe meets Ray's happy grin with a serious, unsmiling stare, then runs toward the corn.
Where's he going?
I don't know.
Joe reaches the dirt track at the edge of the field and slows to a walk. As he slips between the corn stalks, his body fades away and vanishes. Ray and Annie turn to each other, mouths agape.
We're keeping this field.
You bet your ass we are.
Daytime.
You're gonna lose your farm, pal.
Come on, it's so big. I mean, how can you lose something so big?
You misplaced the house once.
Yeah, but it turned up 2 days later, didn't it? Huh?
A red-bearded man with his wife and an older woman.
The stupid baseball field's gonna bankrupt you. Everybody knows it. Look, all I'm saying is if you wait till you default on your loan, you're gonna lose everything. If you sell now, my partners will give you more than fair price. You can walk away with a nest egg, Ray.
Thanks, Mark, but no.
No. Okay. Well, Ray. No. All right, well, let me ask you this. What are you holding on to this place for? I mean, you never liked Iowa.
That's not true.
Come on.
That's not true.
You've never liked farming. It is true. You don't know the first thing about it.
I know a lot about farming.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
oh,
I know a lot more than you think I know.
Well, then how could you plow onto your major crop?
What's a crop?
A smiling Karen runs in and leans over to whisper in Ray's ear.
What's a crop?
Daddy, the baseball game is on.
Excuse us. Excuse us.
Ray and Karen leave the room and sneak outside past the dining room window.
Annie, I don't believe this guy. I mean, I'm trying to bail him out and he goes off to watch television. He used to be so normal.
Yeah.
Outside, a late afternoon sun casts a mellow glow over the baseball field. A handful of white-clad figures emerge out of the cornstalks, shimmering into solidity. eight baseball players, each wearing the same old-fashioned Chicago White Sox uniform as Shoeless Joe. They stand on the sandy warning track. Looking around and slapping each other on the back, they charge onto the field, grinning and jumping for joy. Taking up their positions, they start a horse-playing scrimmage. The first baseman tosses the ball to the second baseman, who runs down and tags the runner trapped between them. A batter smacks a ground ball to the shortstop, who backhands it and throws to second. Ray and Karen watch from the bleachers.
Watch Joe, watch his feet. See, when a pitcher gets a sign and starts a pitch, good left fielder knows what pitch is coming. He can tell from the angle of bat. That's where the ball's going to be.
Joe catches the ball with a graceful leap.
Show up! Stick it in your ear, Gandil.
Yeah, Gandil. If you'd have run like that against Detroit, I'd have won 20 games that year.
For Pete's sakes, Jaconi, that was 68 years ago. Give it up, will you?
Hey, hey! You guys want to play ball or what?
Muscle-bound jerk.
Oh, yeah? At least I got muscles.
No, at most you got muscle.
Come on, asshole. Pitch.
Weaver. Nice.
The catcher jerks a thumb at Karen, who smiles and waves.
Sorry, kid.
It's okay. I don't mind.
All right, Karen.
Ray puts an arm around Karen, hugs her close, and plants a kiss on top of her head. He squints against the sun, smiles, and nods to himself as the game continues. Annie approaches with Mark and the two women.
Mom and everybody's leaving now.
Ray and Karen climb down the bleachers.
Well, it was, thanks for coming.
Ray, think about what I said. I'm just trying to help.
I know.
So I thought you two were going to watch some game.
Guess it's not really a game. It's more like a practice.
Mark furrows his brow while his blonde-haired wife shakes her head.
Rusty? See, there's only eight of them, so they can't play a real game.
Mark squints at him suspiciously.
Eight of what?
Them.
Ray gestures to the field. Mark glances behind himself.
Who them?
Them. Well, you don't see him?
Karen, honey, what are you watching?
The baseball man.
Baseball? Do you see the baseball man right now?
Of course I do.
But you really don't see him?
I don't think it's very polite to try to make other people feel stupid.
Mom, wait a minute. Mom, wait a minute. Dee, wait. You don't see these people? It's not funny, Annie.
Her mother and sister-in-law march away. Annie's mouth drops open in a wondering smile. Hands tucked into the pockets of her shorts, she wanders over to watch the game beside Ray.
This is really interesting.
Later, Ray strolls with Gandil, the husky first baseman.
Hey, Ray, look at this. 68 years since I wore this uniform still fits me like a glove.
You must keep in pretty good shape.
Let's see, I died in 70. That means I haven't had a cigarette in, 18 years? You don't smoke, do you?
No.
All right.
See you later. Shoeless Joe tosses the ball to Ray, who waves at the retreating group.
See you guys.
They amble into the cornstalks and dissolve into thin air. One of the players turns with a mischievous grin.
I'm melting!
That is so cool.
Ray grins and starts toward the house with a springy step.
Ease is pain.
What? I'm sorry, what? I didn't understand. What?
Ease is pain.
What? What the hell does that mean? Ease is pain. What pain? Right? Who's pain?
Ray gestures at the air, looks around, then bites his lip in frustration.
Thanks a lot.
He storms off the field.
Thanks a lot.
And hurls the ball toward home plate. In the kitchen, he snatches a water glass and fills it at the sink.
Come on, honey, wash up. We got the PTA meeting after dinner. They're talking about banning books again. Really subversive books, like The Wizard of Oz, Diary of Anne Frank. What happened to you?
The voice is bad.
Oh, Lord. You don't have to build a football field now, do you?
He said ease his pain.
Ease whose pain?
I asked him. He wouldn't tell me.
Shoeless Joe's?
I don't think so.
One of the other players?
I don't think so.
Ray, this is a very non-specific voice you have out there, and he's starting to piss me off.
She pours French fries into a pan.
I was having a fun day today, you know, a good day.
I'm sorry.
She rolls her eyes as Ray scowls. Later, parents fill a school gymnasium.
And I say smut and filth like this has no place in our school.
A neatly coiffed woman holds up a book, The Boat Rocker by Terrence Mann.
Fascist. I'd like to ease her pain.
Mrs. Kesenick, that book you're waving about is hardly smut. It is considered by many critics to be the classic novel about the 1960s.
It's pornography!
No. The Supreme Court says it's not. And its author, Mr. Mann...
He is sick!
Terrence Mann is a Pulitzer Prize winner, and he is widely regarded as the finest satirist of his time.
Yeah, well, I think he's a pervert. He's probably a communist, too.
What planet are these people from?
Mr. Harris, the so-called novels of Terrence Mann endorse promiscuity, godlessness, the mongrelization of the races, and disrespect to high-ranking officers of the United States Army. And that is why right-thinking school boards all across the country have been banning this man, S-H-I-T, since 1969.
Ray doodles the words, ease his pain.
You know why he stopped writing books? Because he masturbates.
The principal rolls his eyes.
Excuse me, madam. Excuse me.
Annie pops up from her seat.
Terrence Mann was a warm and gentle voice of reason during a time of great madness. He coined the phrase, make love, not war. While other people were chanting, burn, baby, burn, he was talking about love and peace and understanding. I cherished every one of his books, and I dearly wish he had written some more. And I think if you had experienced even a little bit of the 60s, you might feel the same way, too.
The woman smiles sourly.
I experienced the 60s.
No, I think you had two 50s and moved right on into the 70s.
Annie, look at this.
Oh, yeah? Well, your husband plowed under his corn and built a baseball field.
Now, there's an intelligent response.
Annie. The weirdo.
All heads turn to Annie.
Annie.
Honey, it's all right. I'll be cool. At least... he is not a book burner, you Nazi cow.
The wave of head swivels back to the woman.
At least I'm not married to the biggest horse's ass in three counties.
All right, Beulah, do you want to step outside? Bye!
A burly man holds Beulah back.
All right. I've got a better idea. Let's put it to a vote, all right? Who's for Eva Braun here? Who wants to burn books? Who wants to spit on the Constitution of the United States of America? Anybody?
Annie puts her hands on her hips and looks around. Dozens of expressionless faces stare back at her.
All right. Now, who's for the Bill of Rights? Who thinks freedom is a pretty darn good thing? Come on, let's see those hands!
She slaps Ray, whose arm sneaks up.
Who thinks that we have to stand up to the kind of censorship that they had under Stalin?
One by one, the parents raise their hands until Annie stands in the middle of a sea of arms. She whirls around with a delighted smile. Beulah crosses her arms, glaring sullenly.
All right, there you go, America. I love you. I'm proud of you.
Annie,
I mean it.
Annie, what? You gotta go.
We gotta go. This is great!
I figured it out.
In the hallway.
Oh, right, you got greater one.
I figured it out.
God, it was just like the 60s
crazy, Jim.
I just figured it out.
Step aside, you Nazi cat.
I know whose pain I'm supposed to eat.
What?
I know whose pain it is I'm supposed to eat.
Ray, I just halted the spread of neo-fascism in America. You're talking...
Terrence Mann.
What about it?
That's whose pain.
Oh, how do you know that?
I don't know. I just know. I mean, I was right about building a field, wasn't I?
Yeah. Well, what's his pain?
I don't know.
Well, how are you supposed to ease it?
I don't know.
Ray. Look, he's my favorite writer, too. But what's Terrence Mann got to do with baseball?
Ray's mouth opens as if to speak, then shuts again. Later, wearing a Berkeley t-shirt, he sits at a library microfilm machine. He finds an article entitled, Where is Terrence Mann Now That We Really Need Him? Later, he takes notes on more articles. Two appear in Time and Newsweek. Another headline reads, Five arrested in sit-in at New York University. Terrence Mann arrested. Later, he leaves the library with Annie.
Annie, it's incredible. By the early 70s, the guy decides people have become either too extremist or too apathetic to listen to him. So he stops writing books. He starts writing poetry about whales and stuff. And then he starts fooling around with a home computer. He gets hooked. You know what he does now?
Nope.
He writes software for interactive children's videos. I mean, they teach kids how to resolve their conflicts peacefully.
He holds a thick stack of notes.
God, what an amazing guy.
Yeah, but what's he got to do with baseball?
In the April 1962 issue of Jet Magazine, there's a story here. It's called, This Is Not a Pipe, okay? It's not his best work, but the hero of the story, a character that Mann created 26 years ago, is named John Kinsella, my father.
Wow.
What do you mean, wow?
What do you want me to say? Big wow. What's it got to do with baseball?
You drive.
She mimics him and climbs into the pickup truck. Later on the highway.
Okay, the last interview he ever gave was in 1973. Guess what it's about?
Some kind of team sport.
Annie, the guy was a baseball fanatic. Listen to this. As a child, my earliest recurring dream was to play at Ebbets Field with Jackie Robinson and the Brooklyn Dodgers. Of course, it never happened, and the Dodgers left Brooklyn, and they tore down Ebbets Field. But even now, I still dream that dream.
That's sad.
They pull up in front of their house.
The man wrote the best books of his generation. He was a pioneer in the civil rights and the anti-war movement. I mean, he made the cover of Newsweek. He knew everybody. He did everything. And he helped shape his time. I mean, the guy hung out with the Beatles. But in the end, it wasn't enough. And what he missed was baseball.
Oh, my God.
What?
As a small boy, he had a bat named Rosebud.
Fine. Annie, the guy hasn't been to a live baseball game since 1958.
So, in order to ease his pain, you're supposed to take him to a ball game.
Yes.
She rolls her eyes and goes inside.
Ray, this is nuttier than building the baseball
no,
field.
No, it's not. It's pretty weird, I'll grant you. But building a field, that was weirder. 5-10% weirder.
I'm sorry, pal. I'm going to have to nip this one in the bud. We are having moderate to heavy financial difficulties here. And you can't take off for Boston while we're going broke in Iowa.
Annie, this is really new territory for both of us, I know. But we're dealing with primal forces of nature here, all right? When primal forces of nature tell you to do something, the prudent thing is not to quibble over details.
Yeah, but why do you have to go? Why can't the voice send somebody else? How about Shirley MacLaine? What, is she too busy? What does this have to do with you?
It's what I have to find out.
Ray, we are behind on the mortgage. That field ate up all of our savings. We could lose this farm.
I won't even stay in motels. I'll sleep in the car. I'll beg for food.
No, now this is too much.
She trots back downstairs.
Now look, I understand your need to prove to yourself and to the world you are not turning into your father, but you've done it. Look, you believed in the magic. It happened. Isn't that enough?
Annie, it's more than that, okay? I know this is totally nuts, but there's another reason I'm supposed to do it. I feel it. I feel it as strongly as I've ever felt anything in my life. There's a reason.
What? Just tell me what it is.
I think something's going to happen to the game. I don't know what, but there's something at Fenway Park, and I got to be there with Terrence Mann to find it out.
Is Fenway the one with the big green wall in left field?
Yeah.
I dreamt last night you were at Fenway with Terrence Mann.
Was I sitting on the first base side?
Yes.
About halfway up on the aisle?
Yeah, you were keeping score and
I was eating a hot dog. I had the same dream.
I'll help you pack.
They run upstairs to their bedroom. Now, Ray drives a weathered red Volkswagen microbus on a tree-lined highway which winds along the sparkling Charles River. Our view pulls back to scan the Boston skyline. The boxy, rectangular Prudential Center towers among quaint rows of brownstones and a few scattered skyscrapers. Now, Ray rolls alongside a green street trolley in a sequence of quick scenes.
Hi, I'm Ray Kinsella. Hi, I'm Ray Kinsella. It's a great pleasure to finally get to... Hi, I'm Ray Kinsella. I'm a really big fan of you. Hi. How do you do, Mr. Man? I have to take you to a baseball. All right, stupid, put your hands up and get in the trunk.
Later, outside a kosher butcher shop.
Look, he lives right around here, do you know him? He's sort of a tall black man. I'm a friend of his.
He was much of a friend. He'd give you the directions himself.
Ray grins at the balding, pot-bellied butcher.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Now he follows an elderly yenta.
I don't know where he means to get away from me. I ain't gonna tell you nothing. Go away. Get out.
Later, he hands $5 to a gas station attendant in a Celtics cap.
Two blocks down, right-hand side. First door that don't have a chicken in the window is his.
No chicken.
Ray wanders away with a skeptical frown. He passes a window with plucked chickens hanging by their feet and a sign that reads, "All our poultry soaked and salted." A dilapidated green door with no windows stands next to it. Ray walks past, does a double take, and goes in. Inside, he examines a row of mailboxes. One has a sticker marked, "Tie-dyed Software." Ray grins wildly and starts up the grubby staircase. At the top, he stands in front of a dull beige metal door and pauses to straighten his tie. He sees a rusty pipe attached to a thin chain and pulls it. A burly, distinguished-looking black man opens the door and glares at him.
Who the hell are you?
Ray extends his hand.
Sir, my name's Ray Kinsella.
His hand hanging in the air, Ray faces the closed door with a stunned stare. He walks away, revealing another tie-dyed sticker on the door. Then strides back and yanks the pipe with determination.
We got a learning disability here?
Mr. Mann, if I could just have 1 minute, please.
Look. I can't tell you the secret of life, and I don't have any answers for you. I don't give interviews, and I'm no longer a public figure. I just want to be left alone. So piss off.
Ray wedges his body in the doorway.
Wait. Look, I've come 1,500 miles to see you at the risk of losing my home and alienating my wife. All I'm asking is 1 minute. Please.
Terrence scowls grimly.
1 minute.
He strides back into the dingy loft, filled with computer equipment, and busies himself at his desk. Ray follows him slowly, rubbing his elbow.
Okay, I understand your desire for privacy, and I wouldn't dream of intruding if this weren't extremely important.
Oh, God. I don't do causes anymore.
This isn't a cause. I don't need money or an endorsement.
Refreshing.
You once wrote, "There comes a time when all the cosmic tumblers have clicked into place and the universe opens itself up for a few seconds to show you what's possible."
Oh, my God.
Terrence grins.
What?
You're from the 60s.
Well, yeah, actually...
He picks up an insect sprayer.
Ow, hey! Back to the 60s.
Wait a
back.
Second.
No place for you here just... in the future. Get back while you still can.
Ray blocks the slamming door.
You've changed. You know that?
Yes, I suppose I have. How about this? Peace, love, dope. Now get the hell out of here.
Glowering, Ray stalks down the hall away from the apartment door. He pauses, then bows his head and stares at the ground with a troubled frown. Narrowing his eyes, he casts a sideways glance in Terrence's direction and sees that the door is not completely shut. He treads slowly to the door, peers in through the crack, and pushes it open. He slips his hand in his jacket pocket and points it at Terrence, who sits hunched over his desk. The rotund, gray-haired man raises his head. Ray paces steadily toward him.
really pissed me off.
Okay, just hold it. Right there. I was hoping I wasn't going to have to do it this way.
What the hell is that?
It's a gun. What do you think it is?
It's your finger.
No, it's not. It's a gun.
Yeah, let me see it.
Get out of here. I'm not going to show you my gun. Now, look, I'm not going to hurt you. I just need you to come with me for a little...
Terrence picks up a crowbar.
What are you doing?
I'm going to beat you with a crowbar until you go away.
Whoa, wait. You can't do that.
There are rules here? Oh, no, there are no rules here.
Ray falls as he backs up.
You're a pacifist!
Terrence, poised to strike, freezes. His eyes glitter behind his wire-rimmed glasses.
Shit!
He turns away.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what? You kidnapping me? What's the deal here?
I was hoping I could just convince you to come with me.
So you are kidnapping me?
I have to take you to a baseball game.
You what?
Tonight's game. Red Sox A's.
Why?
Something will happen there. I don't know what, but we'll find out when it does.
Terrence shuffles to a chair, then perches on its arm, grinning.
My name's Ray Kinsella. You used my father's name for a character in one of your stories. John Kinsella.
You're seeing a whole team of psychiatrists, aren't you?
I don't blame you for thinking that, but no, I'm not. I swear to God, I'm the least crazy person I have ever known.
Then why are you kidnapping me to a baseball game?
May I?
Oh, please. Want a cup of coffee?
No.
Want some cookies?
No. I read an interview you gave a long time ago about how you always dreamed of playing at Ebbets Field and how sad you felt when they tore it down.
I never said that.
You didn't?
I don't even recall thinking that.
Ray's face falls under Terrence's direct gaze. He blinks in confusion.
Weird.
He leans his forehead against a shelf.
This whole thing is so weird.
And why go through with it?
It's a long story.
He spots a coat and hat, picks them up, and offers them with a beseeching grin.
But it's a really good story. And I'll tell you on the way.
I'm not going to get rid of you, am I?
No. If you just come to this game with me, I swear to God, I will never bother you again. Not even a Christmas card.
Terrence eyes him skeptically. Now, an overhead view of brightly lit Fenway Park, filled with fans. Ray hands Terrence a ticket as they walk down a ramp.
So what do you do with yourself these days?
I live. I work. I learn how to cook. I take walks. I watch sunsets.
Don't you miss being involved?
I was the East Coast distributor of Involved. I ate it, drank it, breathed it. Then they killed Martin, killed Bobby. They elected Tricky Dick twice. Now people like you think I must be miserable because I'm not involved anymore. And I got news for you. I spent all my misery years ago. I got no more pain left for any of you. I gave it the office.
So what do you want?
I want them to stop looking to me for answers, begging me to speak again, write again, be a leader. I want them to start thinking for themselves, and I want my privacy.
No, I meant, what do you want?
Ray gestures to a hot dog stand. Three vendors stare at them.
Oh. Dog and a beer.
Ray nods and grins.
Two. Okay, I understand. You should be entitled to as much privacy as you want, but why stop writing?
I haven't published the word in 17 years, and still I have to endure lunatics like you. What do you think would happen if I suddenly came out with a new book? It'd bleed me dry.
Now, a neon Citco sign looms over Fenway's 37-foot-high green wall in left field. An Oakland batter hits a fly ball deep into right. A Red Sox player catches it. In the stands, Ray bends over a scorecard while Terrence stares straight ahead.
Go the distance.
Ray jerks his head up, then glances at Terrence, who remains expressionless. Ray looks around at the cheering fans.
Go the distance.
Pictures of ball players flash at lightning speed on the huge electronic scoreboard in center field. Words emerge from the jumble. Archibald Moonlight Graham, Chisholm, Minnesota. New York Giants, 1922. Lifetime statistics, 1 game, 0 at-bats. Ray copies them down furiously into his program as Terrence watches.
What's the matter?
You didn't see that?
See what?
Ray looks back at the scoreboard, which has gone black. He continues writing solemnly.
I'm sorry, I guess you didn't have to be here.
What?
Whenever you want to go, we can go.
Fine, let's go.
Terrence stands abruptly and follows Ray out of the aisle. Later, they drive away from the park in Ray's red VW bus, past souvenir and popcorn stands. The rain-slick street glows with the reflections of streetlights and neon signs. A passing headlight glows orange behind Ray's head. In the VW, Ray stares straight ahead with a preoccupied scowl. Terrence studies his face, then slowly turns to gaze out the window, blinking thoughtfully. Sparks shower the street from the cable of an electric bus. The dark streets bustle with pedestrians and traffic. Ray pulls up to the curb in front of Terrence's apartment and turns off his headlights.
What is it you're not telling me?
I've already taken up too much of your time.
With a slight ironic grin, Terrence sighs as he searches Ray's earnest face. Then he slowly turns away, opens the door, and climbs out.
I wish I had your passion, Ray. Misdirected though it might be, it is still a passion. I used to feel that way about things, but...
He waves his hand with a shrug.
You got another message, didn't you?
You think I'm crazy?
I already think you're crazy. What did it say?
Said the man's done enough. Leave him alone.
Ray extends his hand. Terrence hesitates, then takes it. They shake firmly. Terrence claps his hands and holds them out in a parting gesture, then picks up his coat and steps away from the VW. Ray pulls away and does a U-turn. Terrence suddenly appears in front of him, his broad form caught in the headlights.
Moonlight Graham.
Son!
So what?
Saw it. New York Giants, 1922. He played 1 game, never got to bat. You saw it.
What did I see, Ray?
Chisholm, Minnesota. God damn it, man, we were the only ones who saw it. Did you hear the voice, too? It's all right to admit it. It's what told me to find you. Did you hear it?
Go the distance.
Yes. Do you know what it means?
Yes.
What?
It means we're going to Minnesota to find Moonlight Graham.
We're going. We?
I must be out of my mind.
What do we do? What do we do when we find him?
How the hell am I supposed to know that?
Terrence gets in the bus.
That's right. You're right. That's so bitchin'.
I don't believe I'm doing this.
Daytime. Ray's VW rolls along a sun-soaked, tree-lined highway. Inside, Terrence's head droops to one side, his eyes closed. Later, Terrence drives at night while Ray sleeps.
Hey, Annie, guess what? I'm with Terrence Mann.
Oh, my God, you kidnapped him.
No, I didn't. He wanted to. Look, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to be a few days longer. We're going to Minnesota now.
I don't believe this. What's in Minnesota?
An old ball player. Okay, I'll explain when I get home. How are things with you?
Fine.
Great. Look, Ann, I gotta go, okay? Give Karen a hug for me, and I love you.
I love you, too. Hey, someday explain all this to me, okay?
I'll try. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Annie's smile fades. She turns to face Mark and two stern-faced men in suits and ties.
Why didn't you tell him?
She heaves a deep sigh.
Annie, you got no choice in the matter.
Now, a tranquil street lined with brick buildings. A banner reads Chisholm Centennial, 1988.
Half a dozen grams. No Archibald. No Moonlight.
Follow me.
Terrence twirls and points his finger and leads Ray toward a gray brick building with the words Chisholm Tribune Press stenciled on the door. Next door, a neon sign reads the Lantern Supper Club.
Hello.
A tidy, white-haired woman.
Excuse me, maybe you can help us. We're looking for an ex-baseball player named Archibald Graham.
Oh, you mean Doc Graham?
No, I think his nickname was Moonlight.
Well, that's Dr. Graham.
Dr. Graham?
His baseball career never amounted to much, so he went back to school. His father was a doctor.
Do you know where we can find him?
It's nothing bad. We're not from the IRS or anything.
Doc Graham is dead. He died in 1972.
Later, they pore over a newspaper clipping.
And there were times when children could not afford eyeglasses or milk or clothing. Yet no child was ever denied these essentials, because in the background there was always Dr. Graham. Without any fanfare or publicity, the glasses or the milk or the ticket to the ball game found their way into the child's pocket.
You wrote that?
The day he died.
Yes, sir.
You're a good writer.
So are you.
The woman pats his shoulder and walks away. Ray and Terrence slump at a desk covered with old clippings.
Something's missing.
Well, he sounds like he was a wonderful man.
Half the towns in North America have a Doc Graham. What makes this one so special? We have to travel halfway across the country to find him 16 years after he died. There's got to be more.
Later, in a smoky neighborhood bar, Terrence interviews a series of older men.
What else?
He always wore an overcoat. He had white hair. And he always carried an umbrella.
What was the umbrella for?
I think it got to be a habit, you know, something to hang on to. But if you asked him, he really said he used it to beat away his lady admirers.
Tell me about his wife.
Alicia. She moved to South Carolina after Doc passed. She passed a couple of years later. She always wore blue. The shopkeepers in town would stock blue hats because they knew if Doc walked by, he'd buy one. When they cleaned out his office, they found boxes of blue hats that he never got around to give her. I bet you didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
Terrence smiles, his eyes shining. Later, at a roadside motel.
No screwing, no drinking, no opium, no midnight abortions, no illegitimate children, no shady finances.
You sound disappointed.
Shooter Joe had a problem. That's why he needed you. This guy doesn't need us.
Terrence.
Ray bolts up, eyes glued to a paper.
Did you know you're missing?
He hands the newspaper to Terrence, whose eyebrows shoot up in alarm.
Oh, God. His father, who lives in Baltimore, notified police after receiving no answer to repeated telephone calls. Shoot. I better call him.
You want me to?
Thanks.
As Terrence reaches for the phone, Ray picks up his weathered brown leather jacket and heads for the door. As Ray steps outside, Terrence starts to dial, then giggles.
What did I tell him?
Outside, Ray wanders down a dark, empty, moon-flooded street. His step falters slightly as a white-haired man passes by, but Ray keeps walking. His brow furrows as he stops in front of a poster. It reads, "Four more years, re-elect the president," around a photo of a smiling Richard Nixon. Ray, open-mouthed, turns slowly to gaze at a brightly lit movie marquee which reads, "The Godfather, one of this year's 10 best.
This year's?
A gentle wind ruffles his hair. A delighted smile brushes his lips, then fades as he gazes down the deserted street. He spots a large black sedan parked by the curb and kneels to peer at its Minnesota license plate. He carefully brushes away a patch of dirt to reveal the registration sticker on the bottom left-hand corner. It reads, 72. Ray straightens and looks up and down the street with narrowed eyes. The silhouette of the white-haired man, wearing a tweed cap and carrying an umbrella, paces steadily down the sidewalk into a thick bluish-white mist.
Doc?
Dr. Graham?
Ray walks, then runs after the white-haired man as he ambles down the luminous, mist-shrouded sidewalk.
Dr. Graham?
The man stops and turns with a hint of a smile.
My name's Ray Kinsella. I'm from Iowa. Are you Moonlight Graham?
Doc Graham smiles gently beneath his full white mustache.
No one's called me Moonlight Graham in 50 years.
Ray beams.
Well, I've come a very long way to see you.
You know, I couldn't sleep tonight. Usually I sleep like a baby. I told Alicia I was going to take a walk.
Do you mind if I join you? I mean, I'd like to talk to you.
Let's walk over to my office. What do you want to talk to me about?
Well, when you got to the majors, you played only one inning of one game. What happened that inning?
It was the last day of the season. Bottom of the eighth inning, we were way ahead. I'd been up with the club about 3 weeks, but I hadn't seen any action. Suddenly, old John McGraw points a bony finger in my direction, and he says, right field.
Yes, sir.
I jumped up like I was sitting on a spring.
Grabbed my glove and ran out on the field.
They enter an old-fashioned doctor's office.
Did you get to make a play?
I never hit the ball out of the infield. Game ended, the season was over. I knew they'd send me back down. I couldn't bear the thought of another year in the minors. So I decided to hang him up.
He hangs his umbrella and coat on the wall.
Oh, sit down.
Thank you. So what was that like?
It was like having this close to your dreams. And then watch them brush past you like a stranger in a crowd. At the time, you don't think much of it. You know, we just don't recognize the most significant moments of our lives while they're happening. Back then, I thought, well, there'll be other days. I didn't realize that that was the only day. And now, Ray Kinsella, I want to ask you a question. What's so interesting about a half an inning that would make you come all the way from Iowa to talk to me about it 50 years after it happened?
I didn't really know till just now, but I think it's to ask you if you could do anything you wanted, if you could have a wish.
Doc Graham eyes him keenly and nods.
And are you the kind of a man who could grant me that wish?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Well, you know, I never got to bat in the major leagues. I'd have liked to have that chance just once to stare down a big league pitcher. Stare him down, and just as he goes into his wind-up, wake. Make him think you know something he doesn't. That's what I wish for. Chance to squint at a sky so blue that it hurts your eyes just to look at it. To feel the tingle in your arm as you connect with the ball. To run the bases, stretch a double into a triple, and flop face first into third. Wrap your arms around the bag. That's my wish, Rickinson. And is there enough magic out there in the moonlight to make this dream come true?
What would you say if I said yes?
I think I'd actually believe you.
Well, sir, there's a place where things like that happen, and if you want to go, I can take you.
Doc Graham looks out the window with a wistful smile.
This is my most special place in all the world, Ray. Once a place touches you like this, the wind never blows so cold again. You feel for it. Like it was your child. I can't leave just.
I understand. I do. But I really think you're supposed to come with us.
No.
Ray's face falls as Doc Graham shakes his head.
But your wish.
It'll have to stay a wish. I was born here. I lived here. I'll die here, but no regrets.
50 years ago, for 5 minutes, you came you came this close. I mean, it would kill some men to get that close to their dream and not touch it. God, they'd consider it a tragedy.
Son, if I'd only gotten to be a doctor for 5 minutes, now that would have been a tragedy.
Ray smiles under Doc's affectionate gaze.
I better be getting home. At least she'll think I got a girlfriend.
He winks.
And he smiled. And then I figured maybe we're not supposed to take him with us. I don't know.
In the hotel room.
So now I don't know why in the hell we were supposed to come here.
Maybe. It was to find out if one enemy can change the world.
Think it did?
Did for these people. If he'd gotten a hit, he might have stayed in baseball. I don't know. Well, your wife called before. She wants you to call us tonight.
At the farm, Annie lies in bed.
Ray? I'm fine. I'm just so glad it's you. Listen, I talked to the bank, and I asked them if we could miss a payment or two. And they told me that they had just sold the note on the farm to Mark and his partners. Right, so they own the paper now. And he says if we don't sell to them, they're going to foreclose. Ray, we don't have the money.
Okay, look, I've got to take Mr. Mann back to Boston first, all right? So it's,
No.
Wait a second.
I'm going to Iowa with you.
A slow smile tugs at Ray's lips.
We're coming home.
Daytime. The VW bus rolls down an empty two-lane highway.
Well, I can't quit now. Gotta see this ballpark.
Not everyone can see it. You might not.
Give it a try.
Ray grins and spots a boy walking by the side of the road with his thumb extended, hitchhiking.
I need all the Carmichael kit right now.
Ray pulls over. The boy approaches them eagerly, a duffel bag slung over his shoulder.
Thanks. You're the first car by.
How far are you going?
How far are you going?
Iowa.
Well, if it's okay with you, I think I'll just ride along a while. I play baseball.
Hop in.
All right.
The fresh-faced teenage boy climbs in the back eagerly. Terrence grins.
I'm looking for a place to play. I heard that all through the Midwest, they have towns with teams. And in some places, well, they'll even find you a day job so you can play ball nights and weekends.
This is your lucky day, kid. We're going someplace kind of like that.
All right.
I'm Ray Kinsella. This is Terrence Mann.
Hi. I'm Archie Graham.
Ray and Terrence exchange a stunned stare, then turn slowly to gaze at the boy. Ray pulls off his sunglasses, his jaw dropped in bewilderment. Later, Archie lies asleep.
You know, it's funny the way he described towns, you know, finding you a job so that you could play on their team. They haven't done that for years. My dad did that for a while, but that was in the 20s.
What happened to your father?
He never made it as a ball player, so he tried to get his son to make it for him. By the time I was 10, playing baseball got to be like eating vegetables or taking out the garbage. So when I was 14, I started to refuse. You believe that? American boy refusing to have a catch with his father?
Why 14?
Ray bites his lip.
That's when I read The Boat Rocker by Terrence Mann.
Oh, God.
Never played catch with him again.
You see, that's the kind of crap people always try to lay on me. It's not my fault you wouldn't play catch with your father.
I know. Anyway, when I was 17, I packed my thing, said something awful, and left. After a while, I wanted to come home, but I didn't know how. Made it back to the funeral.
The empty highway in front of them stretches toward a faraway green valley. The scene dissolves to nighttime.
What was the awful thing you said? To your father?
Ray stares at the road.
He said I could never respect a man whose hero was a criminal.
Who was his hero?
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
You knew he wasn't a criminal. Then why did you say it?
I was 17. Son of a bitch died before I could take it back.
could tell him.
He bites his lip and shakes his head.
I never met my wife. I never saw his granddaughter.
Terrence points at Archie.
This is your penance.
I know. I can't bring my father back.
So the least you can do is bring back his hero.
Well.
Now I know what everybody's purpose here is. Except mine.
Ray smiles and nods out the window. Terrence grabs his wire-rimmed glasses from his shirt pocket, puts them on, and peers outside. Out of the pitch blackness, Ray's baseball diamond suddenly appears in the distance, its light towers blazing. Now the dusty bus pulls up to the farmhouse and stops in the shadows near the white picket fence. Ray, Terrence, and Archie climb out.
Daddy!
Karen! Come here.
Karen leaps into Ray's arms as Annie rushes out of the house.
Hi! Oh, we missed you. Are you okay?
Yeah. This is Terrence Mann.
Terry.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Terry.
And this young fella is... This is Archie Graham.
Archie?
He's come to practice with the team.
Yeah, well, he's going to be able to do a lot more than that.
What does that mean?
A couple of dozen baseball players in various team uniforms crowd the field, stretching and playing catch. Shoeless Joe spots Ray over his shoulder.
Hey, Ray.
Welcome back.
Thanks, Joe.
Oh, my God. That's Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Well, of course it is. I mean, you didn't believe me?
I thought I did, but... Oh, my.
Hi, Danny.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Terry, I'd like you to meet Shoeless Joe Jackson. Joe, Terry Mann.
He stares in disbelief.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
Pleasure's mine. Ray, I hope you don't mind, but we got tired of just having practices, so we brought another team out with us so we could have some real games.
I don't mind. Where'd they come from?
Where did we come from? You wouldn't believe how many guys wanted to play here. We had to beat them off with a stick.
Hey, that's Smokey Joe Wood. And Mel Ott. And Gil Hodges.
And Ty Cobb wanted to play. None of us could stand a son of a bitch when we were alive, so we told him to stick it. Hey. Are you Graham?
Yes, sir.
Well, what are you doing on the sidelines here? You came to play ball, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll go warm up.
Yes, sir.
Archie dashes off, grinning.
Rookies.
Unbelievable.
It's more than that. It's perfect.
Later, a batter bunts the ball along the third baseline. Chakotay, the White Sox pitcher, hurls it to third, where the runner slides in head first. Archie, wearing a baggy New York Giants uniform, ambles up to home plate with a bat resting on his shoulder. He chomps on a piece of gum and nervously eyes the pitcher.
Well, Graham! Well,
Graham! Archie!
God, he looks like a baby out there next to these guys.
He is.
Archie grips the bat and crouches in his stance. When Chakotay nods at the catcher's signal and gets ready for his windup, Archie grins and winks at him. Chakotay's jaw juts out furiously. The ball whizzes by Archie's head. Archie falls to the ground.
Hey, hey!
Don't let him shake you up, Arch. Hang in there, buddy.
Hey, Knuckles, what are you throwing at the kid for?
He winked at me.
Don't wink, kid.
Good thing for you we didn't throw the fastball, kid.
Archie swings the bat and grits his teeth in determination.
I see that fastball.
The catcher rolls his eyes and shakes his head. Archie ducks as the ball spins past.
Come on! Give us a break!
Hey, ump. How about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Time!
Archie goes to the backstop to talk to Joe.
All right, those first two were high and tight. So what do you think the next one's going to be?
Well, either lone away
or in my ear.
He's not going to want to load the bases, so look for low and away.
Right.
But watch out for in your ear.
Frowning, Archie walks back to home plate.
Come on, go,
batter, 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 batter!
Come on, Arch. This takes one.
Archie steps up to the plate and takes a deep breath. After a few practice swings, he crouches and cocks the bat behind his ear, fixing Chakotay in his dark, wide-eyed gaze. The ball flies toward the center fielder. The runner sprints from third to home and slides as the catcher tags him. Chakotay kicks furiously at the mound. Archie touches the rim of his cap in acknowledgement. Terrence stands up, raises his arms, and sits down again. Ray and Annie do the wave as well. Archie jogs back to the bench. Joe pats him on the chest and goes up to bat. The other White Sox players rub his head and affectionately punch his arm. Archie glances over at Ray, his dark brown eyes shining, and nods with a happy grin. Ray returns the nod with a quiet, contented smile. The scene fades to black. Daytime. A shiny black Jeep rolls up the dirt path toward Ray and Annie's farm and parks at the edge of the baseball field. Sitting on the bleachers, Ray and Annie glance over and frown. The red-bearded Mark gets out and walks across the diamond, cutting directly through the game. The batter, his view blocked, swings and misses.
Hi.
The furious batter goes after Mark, but is held back by the catcher.
You're interrupting the game, Mark.
Ray, it's time to put away your little fantasies and come down to earth.
It's not a fantasy, Mark. They're real.
Who is real?
Shoeless Joe Jackson, the White Sox, all of them.
You mean?
No, I can't see any of it.
Who's this? Elvis?
Ray jumps up.
Ray!
And climbs down the bleachers.
As a matter of fact, it's Terrence Mann.
Right. How do you do? I'm the Easter Bunny.
Terrence cracks up.
Ray, you have
Look,
no
I'm not
money.
Selling
Ray,
you
Ray,
my home.
You have no money. You have a stack of bills to choke a pig, and come fall, you got no crop to sell. But I do have a deal to offer you that's going to allow you to stay on the land.
Daddy, you don't have to sell the farm.
Let us buy you out. We'll leave the house. You can live on it rent-free as long as you want.
What about the baseball
field? Ray, do you realize how much this land is worth?
Yeah. $2,200 an acre.
And you gotta realize we can't keep a useless baseball diamond in the middle of rich farmland.
Read my lips, Mark. We're staying, all right? We're staying.
Ray, you're bankrupt! I'm offering you a way to keep your home because I love my sister. Now, my partners, Ray, they don't give a damn about you, and they're ready to foreclose right now.
Daddy, we don't have to sell the farm.
Karen, please.
Just wait. Wait.
People will come.
What people, sweetheart?
From all over. They'll just decide to take a vacation, see? And they'll come to Iowa City. They'll think it's really boring, so they'll drive up and want to pay us, like buying a ticket.
Ray and Annie squint at her thoughtfully.
You're not seriously listening to this, are you?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Why would anybody pay money to come here?
To watch the game. It will be just like when they were little kids, a long time ago, and they'll watch the game remember what it was like.
What the hell is she talking about?
People will come.
All right, this is fascinating, it is. But the fact remains is that you don't have the money to bring the mortgage up to date, so you're still going to have to sell. I'm sorry, Ray. We got no choice.
He hands Ray a document.
Ray. People will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. It is money they have and peace they like.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers. Sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon.
He strides to the field. The players gather behind him.
They'll find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines. where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game. And it'll be as if they'd dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
Ray, when the bank opens in the morning, they'll foreclose.
People will come, Ray.
You're broke, Ray. You sell now or you lose everything.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good. And it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
Ray, you will lose everything. You will be evicted.
Ray gazes out at the field and scans the faces of the players. Yankees, White Sox, Cardinals, Reds, and Athletics, who have gathered on the field to stare earnestly at him. He stands up and gazes intently at Shoeless Joe, who stands in left field. Joe punches his glove patiently and leans his hands on his knees, ready to field the ball. With a somber scowl, Ray glances from him down to the folded document in his hands. He keeps his head bowed, then looks up decisively.
Nuts, man.
Oh, you're crazy. Absolutely nuts!
Can't do it, pal.
Annie hugs him. Karen bites into a hot
Ray.
Dog.
You build a baseball field in the middle of nowhere, and you sit here and you stare at nothing.
Not nothing.
And you turn your daughter into a damn space.
Get your hands off her.
Karen falls off the bleachers.
Karen?
They jump down next to her. She lies still, her face tinged with blue.
Is she all right?
I don't know.
Is she breathing?
Should I get the car?
Ray looks out onto the field. The young Archie emerges with a concerned frown.
I'm gonna call emergency.
She runs toward the house.
Annie, wait.
What?
Dodging in between the still watchful baseball players, Archie starts to walk, then run toward Ray and Karen. He stops abruptly at the gravel on the edge of the field and gazes down at the boundary, his face twisted with indecision.
Just wait.
Archie stares down at the gravel. His glove drops to the ground. As he steps across, his baseball shoes and striped socks are transformed into a man's wingtip shoes and cuffed trousers. A wrinkled hand carries a black doctor's bag. We scan up the face of the kindly, white-haired Doc Graham.
What do we got here?
She fell.
Mark mutters to himself in astonishment. Doc Graham kneels beside Karen and pries open her mouth.
This child's choking to death.
Get her up.
Hold her steady now.
He slaps her on the back.
Hot dog. Stuck in her throat.
Oh, she'll be all right. She'll be turning handsprings before you know it.
With a wide smile, Doc Graham pushes himself to his feet.
Thank you, Doc.
No, sir. Thank you.
Ray's face falls as he looks to the field.
Oh, my God, you can't go back. You can't go back, can you?
It's all right.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
He pats Ray on the shoulder.
I best be getting on home.
Before Alicia begins to think I got a girlfriend.
He grins at Ray and winks. Ray's lips tremble into a smile. Doc starts toward the field.
Hey, Doc.
Good work, Doc.
He shakes hands with the players as he passes.
How's it going, Doc?
I'll miss you, Doc.
Wouldn't work for me one day, would you, boys?
Hey, Doc.
The players thump him on the shoulder and tip their caps as he trudges toward the corn.
When did these ball players get here?
Shoeless Joe follows Doc with his eyes.
Hey, rookie!
At the edge of the cornfield, Doc stops. His head bowed, he turns slowly to face Joe. They lock eyes, and Joe grins.
we're good.
Doc Graham's sparkling eyes soften into a warm, pensive smile. He turns and enters the cornfield, dissolving into the tangle of green stalks. Mark stares in disbelief.
Do not sell this farm, Ray. You gotta keep this farm.
Mark, you've had a very rough day. Why don't you go inside and get something cold to drink?
Yeah. That's a good idea. Don't sell the farm, Ray.
Mark shuffles toward the house. Ray turns as the players start to file off the field. Joe approaches and tilts up the brim of his cap.
Ray? We're going to call it a day. See you tomorrow.
Okay.
All right.
Joe starts to walk away, then hesitates and turns.
Hey, do you want to come with us?
You mean it?
No, not you. Him.
He points to Terrence, who steps forward as if in a trance.
Him?
Come with you?
Out there.
What is out there?
Come and find out.
Wait a second. Why him? I built this field. You wouldn't be here if it weren't for me. Well, you wouldn't be here if it weren't...
I'm on a patch. You have a family.
I know, but I want to know what's out there. I want to see it.
But you're not invited.
Not invited? What do you mean I'm not invited? That's my corn out there. You guys are guests in my corn.
Ray.
No, wait. I have done everything I've been asked to do. I didn't understand it, but I've done it. And I haven't once asked what's in it for me.
What are you saying, Ray?
I'm saying, what's in it for me?
Is that why you did this? For you?
Under Joe's clear, direct gaze, Ray drops his eyes to the ground.
I think you better stay here, Ray.
Why?
Ray, there was a reason they chose me, just as there was a reason they chose you in this field.
Why?
I gave an interview.
What interview? What are you talking about?
The one about Ebbets Field, the one that charged you up and sent you all the way to Boston to find me.
Ray stalks over to him.
You lied to me.
Well, you were kidnapping me at the time, you big jerk.
Well, you lied to me.
You said your finger was a gun.
Joe breaks into a grin.
Ray, listen to me, Ray. Listen to me. There is something out there, Ray. And if I had the courage to go through with this, what a story it'll make. Shoeless Joe Jackson comes to Iowa.
As he kicks at the ground, Ray smiles reluctantly. Terrence shakes with laughter.
Are you going to write about it?
What? You better write about it.
You're going to write about it.
That's what I do.
They grin at each other. Ray's arms folded across his chest.
Good. Good.
Ray looks Terrence straight in the eye. Terrence nods, and Ray extends his hand. After a firm handshake, Terrence turns toward the cornfield. He stops to smile at Annie and Karen as they walk out onto the field.
Honey, where's he going?
Harry's been invited to go out with the other players. How are you feeling, sweetheart?
Stupid. You mean out?
Yeah. Out.
Far out.
Terrence grins happily at Annie.
I want a full description.
Take care of this family.
He strides toward the waving stalks of corn.
Be careful.
Terrence turns and waves. Karen hugs Annie, who rests a hand on Ray's shoulder. When he reaches the corn, Terrence pauses and peers into the thick tangle, then shoots a grin at Ray. He walks up to the edge and hesitantly sticks in his left arm. The stalks wave gently at him in a breeze. He stoops for a low view, then looks back with a wide, delighted grin. He pokes his arm in again and pulls it out playfully, then walks in. As he turns around to beam at them, his body melts into the corn. On the ball field, Ray and Annie exchange a contented smile, then put their arms around each other and start back to the house. They pause to gaze back at Shoeless Joe, who stands on the field watching them.
Bye.
He continues to stare.
What?
Joe starts to grin.
What are you grinning at, you ghost?
If you build it...
He glances to his right.
He will come.
Joe smiles and walks away. A catcher in a pinstriped New York Yankees uniform stands at the backstop, unstrapping his gear. He pulls off his mask and turns to face them.
Oh, my God.
What? What is it?
Ray stares in disbelief.
It's my father.
The handsome, young, square-jawed catcher stares at him.
Ease his pain.
Go the distance.
Ray turns to Joe's retreating back.
It was you.
Far away, Joe turns around.
No, Ray. It was you.
Joe smiles lingeringly at them, turns, and strides away. From overhead, we see him glance up into the pale blue sky, enter the tall cornstalks, and disappear. Our view continues to sweep over the lush green field of waving, shimmering corn, which stretches endlessly into the horizon. On the field, John Kinsella drops his mask and starts unhurriedly toward Ray.
God, I only saw him years later when he was worn down by life. Look at him. He's got his whole life in front of him, and I'm not even a glint in his eye. What do I say to him?
Why don't you introduce him to his granddaughter?
A shy smile spreads across John's face.
Hi.
Hi.
Just wanted to thank you folks for putting up this field, letting us play here. I'm John Kinsella.
Ray shakes his hand.
I'm Ray. My wife, Annie. This is my daughter, Karen. Karen, this is my...
John peers curiously at him.
This is John.
Hi, John.
Hiya, Karen.
Well, we're gonna let you two talk. I mean, if all these people are gonna come, we got a lot of work to do. It's very nice meeting you.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Now, as John and Ray stroll across the empty field, the setting sun casts a delicate rose-colored glow on the horizon. Ray and John both fiddle nervously with their hands, glancing at each other out of the corners of their eyes.
You catch a good game.
Thank you.
They share a long, sober look.
It's so beautiful here.
For me...
Well, for me, it's like a dream come true.
Ray gazes at him with wide, searching eyes.
Can I ask you something? Is this heaven?
It's Iowa.
Iowa?
Yeah.
Ray bites his trembling lip.
Could have sworn it was heaven.
He follows John, who walks over to home plate and stoops to pick up his thick, old-fashioned mitt.
Is there a heaven?
Dreams come true.
Ray turns away from John's earnest gaze to soak in his surroundings. He stares out at his fields, then turns to look back at the house. Annie and Karen cuddle on the porch swing. The house is suffused with a warm, golden glow from the lights within.
Maybe this is heaven.
He turns to his father with a smile. John sighs. They grasp each other's hands in a firm, lingering handshake. John turns and walks away. Ray follows him with his eyes.
bad?
John turns around, his eyebrows raised.
You want to have a catch?
I'd like that.
Blinking back tears, Ray hurries to pick up a ball and glove lying on the field. He swallows hard and throws. John smiles tenderly. Ray takes the ball from his glove and rubs it wonderingly. He smiles and tosses it back. Their smiles grow wider as they throw the ball easily back and forth. On the porch, Annie grins as she watches them. She moves to switch on the light towers. Light floods the field as father and son continue to toss the ball. Annie smiles and goes inside, her gaze lingering on the tranquil scene. Our view drifts over the ball field. In the distance, a steady stream of headlights, well over a mile long, beams through the dusk and heads up the road toward the farm. We drift higher and higher, hundreds of feet into the air. The infinite, delicate strand of car lights leading to the field glows vividly in the darkness. Our view floats up to the sky, an endless vista of deep midnight blue. The scene fades to black. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a service of the WGBH Educational Foundation. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. Descriptions read by Rena Baskin. Credits roll. Cast: Kevin Costner as Ray Kinsella, Amy Madigan as Annie Kinsella, Gabby Hoffman as Karen Kinsella, Ray Liotta as Shoeless Joe Jackson, Timothy Busfield as Mark, James Earl Jones as Terrence Mann, Burt Lancaster as Dr. Moonlight Graham, Frank Whaley as Archie Graham, Dwyer Brown as John Kinsella, James Andelin as the feed store farmer, Marianne Keene as the feed store lady, Fern Persons as Annie's mother, Kelly Caulfield as Dee, Mark's wife, Michael Milhone as Buck Weaver, third baseman, Steve Easton as Eddie Chakotay, pitcher, Charles Hoyes as Swede Risberg, catcher, Art LaFleur as Chick Gandil, first baseman, Lee Garlington as Beulah, the angry PTA mother, Mike Nussbaum as the principal, Larry Brandenburg, Mary McDonald Gershon, and Robert Kurtz as PTA hecklers, Don John Ross as the Boston butcher, B. Fredman as the Boston yenta, Jeffrey Nofts as the Boston pump jockey, Ann Seymour as the Chisholm newspaper publisher, C. George Biasi as the first man in the bar, Howard Scherf as the second man in the bar, Joseph Ryan as the third man in the bar, Joe Glassberg as the customer. Additional ball players: Mark Danker, Frank Dardis, Jim Doty, Mike Goad, Jay Hammond, Mike Hodge, Steve Jenkins, Terry Kelleher, Ron Lucas, Fred Martin, Kurt McWilliams, Jude Milbert, Steve Olberding, Gene Potts, James Rowe, Paul Sherman, Dale Till, and Tom Vogel. Brian Frankish as the umpire. Jeffrey Neal Silverman as the center fielder. Himself as the voice. Unit production manager, Brian Frankish. First assistant director, William M. Elvin. Second assistant director, Alan Edmiston. Associate producer, Lloyd Levin. Script supervisor, Jan Evans. Second assistant director, Grant Gilmore. Camera operator, Ken Ferris. First assistant camera, Lawrence Carmen. Additional first assistant camera, David Kessler, Mark Caron, and Joey Ciccio. Second assistant camera, Frank Byrne, Brad Ruby, and Tom Ryan. Camera loaders, Gregory Jackson, Cynthia Pushek, and Todd Gavin. Panaglide operators, Jim Muro and Randy Nolan. Panaglide assistants, Jimmy McConkey, Tom Selman, and Robert Gersikoff. Helicopter pilot, T. David Jones. Aerial photography, John M. Stevens. First assistant camera, Scott Fuller. Sound mixer, Russell Williams II. Boom operator, Albert Aquino. Cable, Russ Neiderhauser. Gaffer, Patrick Reddish. Best Boy Electric, John Carney. Rigging Gaffer, Jules Labarthe. Lamp Operators, John Vecchio, Kim Kono, Paul Hauser, Mark Martins, Richard Vest, John Friday, Roger Tang, and Charles Brady. Riggers, Bud Young, Charles King, Gary Goldman, and Ron Cook. Key Grip, Tim Pershing. Best Boy Grip, Dan Pershing. Dolly Grip, Tracy Nefsker. Second Grip, James Early. Grips, Mike McFadden, J.D. Ault, Richard Bond, Tyree Miller, Jeff Smith, Paul Schneider, K. Janice Metcalf, Jeffrey Zucker, Art Bartels, Tim Forrest, Tom Osman, Tyler Osman, Tim Osman, and Geraldine Shea. Key makeup artist, Richard Arrington. Key hairstylist, Enid Arias. Hairstylist to Amy Madigan, L. Elliott. Hair consultant, Donald Morand. Additional makeup artists, Bonita DeHaven, Cindy Stratton, Sharon McDonald, and Leslie Ehrman. Costume supervisor, P. K. Morris. Wardrobe assistants, Pamela Nurek and Cynthia Roby. Property master, Douglas Fox. Assistant property master, Doug DuRose. Property production assistant, Craig Schaefer. Art director, Leslie McDonald. Set director, Nancy Haig. Assistant set director, Paige Augustine. Lead decorator, Brian Cash. Set dressers, Claire Gall and Leslie Linville. Set designers, Don Snyder and Kathleen McKernan. Swing gang, Jess Moreno, James Meehan, Dan Jansen, John Blackman, and Kurt Walliser. Construction coordinator set, Frank Viviano. Construction foreman, John Snyder. Gang boss, Eric Schultz. Carpenters, Kim McDonald, John Moore, Gene Tully, Steve Feldman, Joseph Huseman, Jr., and William Primising. Scenic artist, George Hinzo. Scenic painter, Gilbert Johnquist. Construction coordinator, farm, Stephen L. Meyer. Construction foreman, Gary Schmidt. Lead carpenter, Bob Rowling. Carpenters, Dennis Tully, William Gourley, Tim Gourley, Steve Koch, Richard Hess, Stan Myers, Roger Kelzer, Pat Swan, and Phil Hyde. Construction electrician, Gene Schlecht. Farm advisor, Eldon Trum. Gardener, Carol Petrick. Baseball field construction, Pacific Sod and Grain, Pro Turf Division, Neil Beeson. Head baseball coach, Raul Dedo. Assistant baseball coach, Don Buford. Iowa baseball coach, Gene Potts. Baseball trainer, Jay Hemond. Casting assistant, Los Angeles, Pam Jekyll. Iowa casting coordinator, Batgirl, Susan Rydell. Casting assistants, Iowa, Lynn Allison, Jim Meyer, and Tom Robbins. Location managers, Mitch Marcus and Bob Hudgens. Assistant location manager, Steve Mose. Production coordinator, Pamela Hoffman. Production secretary, Patricia Walsh. Production accountant, James McCarthy. Assistant accountant, Becky Hilliard. Promotional coordinator, Robert H. Lemmer. Unit publicist, Dave Fulton. Still photographer, Melinda Sue Gordon. Special effects, Robbie Knott. Stunt coordinator, Randy Peters. Location projectionist, Bill Durr. Video playback, Brian Roberts, Steve Braderick, and Dick Clark. Key set medic, Peter Rathje. Set nurse, Janice McDonnell. Teacher, Christine Resch. Caterer, Sunrise Catering. Craft service, Patrick Crowley and Ken Kringle. Transportation coordinator, Randy Peters. Transportation captain, Candace Wells. Transportation co-captain, Billy Palmer. Film truck driver, Mike Kane. Chapman crane driver, Dan Lovelace. Property truck driver, Ross Hobday. Shotmaker operator, Tim Perry. Honey wagon driver, Steve Humphrey. Drivers, William Battalotto, Michael McMahon, Don Feeney, Joe Feeney, Lonnie Craigle, Doug Tan, Jeff Carney, John Miller, Dave Wilford, Mary Delaney, and Don Beck. Production associates, Gene Fry, Wendy Spence, Kelly LeClaire, Chris Prue, Brett Eilers, Derek Johansson, Mary Coyle, and Eric Salmu. Musco Mobile Lighting General Manager, David Crookham. Technicians, Roger Spurgen, Brad Chelistvig, Mike DeMayer, George Glass, Jerome Feinart, Todd Braden, Brian Palpiter, and Ron Konecki. First Assistant Editor, Justine Turner. Apprentice Editors, Mitch Marcus and Howard Spiro. Assistant Editor, Johanna Jimenez. Negative Cutter, Gary Burritt. Supervising Sound Editor, Sandy Gendler. Sound Editors, Noah Blau, Jamie Parker, Niels Jensen, Donald Melloth, and John Morris. Supervising ADR Editor, Becky Sullivan Koblenz. Supervising Foley Editor, Solange Swab-Boiseau. Foley Editor, Donald Flick. Assistant Sound Editors, Neil Eric Wenger and Lee Grubin. Apprentice Sound Editor, Kathy Chase. Post-Production Facilities, Lionsgate Studios. ADR Mixer, Bob DeShane, CAS. ADR Recordist, Elizabeth Snyder DeSantis. Loop Group, Lee French. Foley Artists, Joan Rowe and Jerry Trent. Foley Mixer, Lee Tinkham. Foley Recordist, Robert Edmondson. Sound Effects Recording, Ken Johnson. Re-recorded at Goldwyn Sound Facility. Re-recording Mixers, Donald O. Mitchell, Kevin O'Connell, and Rick Klein. Recordists, Jim Cavaretta, Jack Keller, and Jeanette Cremarosa. Music Scoring Mixer, Sean Murphy. Additional Orchestrations, Billy May. Instrumental Soloists, Ralph Grierson, Tony Hennigan, James Horner, Mike Taylor, and Ian Underwood. Music Editors, Jim Henriksen and Nancy Fogarty. Associate Music Editor, Jim Flamberg. Special Visual Effects by Industrial Light and Magic. Visual Effects Supervisor, Bruce Nicholson. Visual Effects Camera Operators, Kim Marks and Marty Rosenberg. Effects Production Manager, Ian Bryce. Effects Production Supervisor, Susan Fritz Monahan. Effects Coordinator, Kim Nelson. Optical Photography Supervisor, Peg Hunter. Matt Artist, Matthew Juracek. Matt Visual Consultant, Richard Juracek. Matt Coordinator, Robert Hippard. Opening Montage, Melinda Sue Gordon. Montage Historical Sources. American Stock Photos, California Historical Society, Producers Library Service, 20th Century Fox Movietone News, Incorporated, UCLA Film and Television Archive, Wide World Photos, Sherman Greenberg Film Libraries, Boston Second Unit Production, Popolo Productions Incorporated, Boston Second Unit Director, Lou Popolo, Assistant to Lou Popolo, Janice Wild, Director of Photography, Ricky Bravo, Camera Operator, Peter Norman, First Assistant Camera, Focus, Ricky Bravo Jr., Second Assistant Camera, Ralph Bradafino, Panaglide Operator, Rick Raphael, Panaglide Assistant, Richard Cruedo, Production Associate, Lou Popolo Jr., Title Design, Dan Perry, Film Processing, Duarte, Color Timers, Dale Gran and Bob Higgins, Titles and Opticals, Cinema Research Corporation, Optical Supervisor, Clay Marsh, Insurance, Albert G. Rubin, Grip and Electrical Equipment, Film Trucks, Completion Bond, The Completion Bond Company, Assistance to Phil Alden Robinson, Beth Fortenberry, and Jane DeVries. Assistance to Lawrence Gordon, Stacy Bassoff, and Kellett Tai. Assistant to Charles Gordon, Annie Saunders. Assistant to Brian Frankish, Robert H. Lemmer. Assistant to Kevin Costner, Allison Conant. Music, Crazy, written by Willie Nelson, performed by Beverly D'Angelo. Daydream, written by John Sebastian, performed by The Love and Spoonful, courtesy of Buddha Records by arrangement with Warner Special Products. Jessica, written by Dickie Betts, performed by the Allman Brothers Band, courtesy of PolyGram Records Incorporated. China Grove, written by Tom Johnston, performed by the Doobie Brothers, courtesy of Warner Brothers Records Incorporated by arrangement with Warner Special Products. Lotus Blossom, written by Billy Strayhorn, performed by Duke Ellington, courtesy of Bluebird Records, RCA Records. Panaflex Camera and Lenses by Panavision, color by Deluxe. Dolby Stereo. Dolby Spectral Recording in selected theaters. Special thanks to Waveform Corporation, Major League Baseball, the Boston Red Sox and the Oakland A's, Wendell Jarvis and Susan Reynolds, Iowa Film Office, Rob Appel, Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce, Connie Trenkamp, Dyersville Chamber of Commerce, and especially to Don Lansing, Al Ameskamp, and the people of Dubuque County, Iowa, and Galena, Illinois. Copyright 1989 by Universal City Studios, Incorporated. All rights reserved. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Original soundtrack album available on Novus RCA Records, LPs, cassettes, and CDs. A title appears, For Our Parents. Another title. This motion picture has been rated PG, parental guidance suggested, by the Classification and Rating Administration. Some material may not be suitable for children.